welcome to the Poem of the Week. As usual, our host this week is National Public Radio's Dr. Michael Wilkes and Essential Evidence Senior Editor Dr. Mark A. Bell. Gentlemen.
Hello, Mark. How are you doing?
Hey, Mike. Doing well.
There's a special deal that we're offering to our poems listeners this week. You get two poems for the price of one. Both of them are going to deal with diabetes, and both offer an update on currently accepted standards. The first is from the 2015 ADA standards. The second one looks at what guidelines can tell us about individual treatment goals and treatments for patients with new or established type 2 diabetes. We know that the ADA is a relatively conservative group, and they hold on to their guidelines rather rigidly, both in terms of monitoring and detecting glucose and in terms of blood pressure. But it looks like they've eased up a bit, and with regard to initial treatment, it seems like metformin is a clear winner. Mark, let's start with looking at what changes have been made to the standards of medical care by the ADA for 2015.
Yeah, thanks, Mike. And by the way, this is a free podcast, so I'm not sure how they get two for one. But
it's twice as free.
Exactly, twice as free as it was before.
Right.
Only today, though.
Right.
This is they're generally kind of getting a little more in line with where I think many of us feel the evidence is around type 2 diabetes. And but there's some interesting things. They loosened the pre-meal glycemic target from 70 to 30 to 80 to 130. I guess they kind of tightened it in some ways because it's a narrower range. I think a big change is the diastolic blood pressure goal, just as with the guideline panel formerly known as JNC8, has been relaxed to 90 millimeters from 80. So I think that's pretty important, and it's nice to see those two guidelines harmonized for those of us who are trying to take care of patients who have both hypertension and diabetes. Lipid monitoring, again, it's now driven by risk status, again, trying to be more consistent, I think, with the ATP4 guideline. BMI cut point for when you are an overweight Asian American is 23 instead of 25. Sorry to all of you in the audience who fall into that category. You are now overweight. You didn't know it. You weren't yesterday. You are today. Let's see what else. So one thing they didn't really change was the emphasis on the need for self-monitoring blood glucose. And when you look at the guidelines and the rationale, they say, well, in all the clinical trials, they did self-monitoring, so it must be good. And yet when there have been, and we've covered this before in poems, in a number of poems, that you know every time it's been looked at in every way, even with large, adequately powered trials, newly diagnosed type 2 diabetics or people who've had it for a while, there really wasn't any benefit. And, you know, that's not to say they shouldn't have a meter. It's not to say they shouldn't use it when they feel sick. It's not to say that there aren't selected patients where it might be a good idea based on your judgment or certainly type 1 diabetics. But, you know, I think for a long time we've had this sort of cult of the blood glucose meter. And the cynical side of me says maybe there may be some institutional conflicts of interest around the support from the manufacturers. This is a huge multi-billion dollar business. And I, of course, know nothing about that. I don't know that. This is mere uninformed speculation on my part. But you have to kind of ask that question and say, you know, why are they still hanging on to this when the evidence seems to be going entirely in the other direction?
Hey, Mark, just a quick question. Why I feel compelled to speak up on behalf of Asian Americans, why of all the ethnic groups did they pick on them to lower their BMI from 25 to 23?
You know, well, I think lean body mass, differences in lean body mass differences, I think based on the inclusion criteria on some of the trials done in studies in Asia. So, you know, I can't give you much of a better answer than that, and I'm not sure it's going to change anything that I do, frankly. You know, not because I don't have a large Asian American population, I have, you know, some, but, you know, I'm not sure it's really going to change what we do in terms of treating diabetes, but right. Let's just have an interesting little side note. Sorry. And, you know, just one last thing. There was also at the same time or close to the same time, there was a position statement that came out that was a joint statement from the American Diabetes Association and the European Association for the Study of Diabetes. So, again, the two diabetology specialty disease-oriented, you know, groups. And they're very consistent. And I think Notable is the fact that they are saying targets of less than 7% should really only be used selectively for patients who are younger, can tolerate it, have good resources and support, are highly motivated, don't have any comorbidities, have a long life expectancy. They still say, that group, we should still go for that. And I think that you could defend that by saying that the trials showing lack of benefit of titer control were primarily done in groups where the typical age range was in the 50s and 60s. You can still make a theoretical argument that there's a significant benefit to titer control in those younger patients. But it's good to see them saying, if somebody's in their 60s, they've got a lot of other things going on, let's not beat them up to try and get their A1C down to 6.5% or 6%.
Yeah. I mean, that at least in my practice, is the hardest thing. It's, getting the guys from 13 or 8 even down to, low 7s is fine. But getting below 7, it's really hard. And, you want to congratulate them for having done as good a job as they have. And right. You don't want to push them any harder. They're going to, go find a new doctor.
Or find an arrhythmia somewhere.
Or something, right.
A hypoglycemic episode or, find a tree when they're driving. So, yeah, I think there are some, good reasons to think about that. And yeah, in my practice, I mean, my usual target goal is somewhere between 7 and 7.5%. I think that's where most of the evidence is. I think if someone is achieving a lower target, fine, if they're feeling good. And I think you have a discussion with those younger patients in their 30s and 40s and say, here's what we think theoretically there's a benefit. And so, I'd like you to work on this, but, let's stay in close touch in terms of your, side effects and that kind of thing.
Good approach. What about just quickly the idea of treatment? As I mentioned, metformin seems to be the treatment of choice, but what about when metformin isn't working as well?
Anything else? I mean, it's, I shouldn't say that. We actually were just reviewing these data recently, and it was interesting. In a large database, there were only, I think, 57% of patients who were started on a diabetes drug were started on metformin. I'm not sure what those other 43% were thinking. Now, if you were started on metformin, they actually had a lower likelihood of requiring a second drug than if they were started on another agent initially. So that's kind of interesting. That's a good thing about metformin. And, so you're actually less likely. Now, this was not a randomized trial, so I think it's possible that those docs who are choosing metformin initially are listening to our podcast, are more evidence-based, are more focused on the research, and are also saying, I don't need to add a third drug or a second drug to get their A1C under 6.5% because I know that that isn't necessary. So that may be part of the reason why docs who start somebody on metformin are less likely to end up choosing a second or third drug. But some interesting data. There is still, you still have these reports, mostly observational data, coming out showing that there really may be a problem with the glipizides and the glyburide, that those are associated with some increases in risk of cardiovascular events, and I think should be used cautiously, type 2 diabetes.
Excellent. Nice 2-for-1 poem. Thanks, Mark. We'll talk with you again next week.
Can't wait. Thanks.
That's this week's poem. Thanks for listening. If you'd like to look at this and other recent poems, please go to www.infopoems.com. Please join us again next week for another medical poem.